Celebrate the historic 100th Greeley Stampede, June 23rd through July 4th, featuring concerts, rodeo, carnival, and more. Tickets available at GreeleyStampede.org.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, current NFL wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams, and you're listening to The Whole Show on KFK.
Well, in the midst of an exciting Stanley Cup final between the Avalanche and the Lightning, we got the NBA draft coming up tomorrow. Excited to see what the Nuggets will do now that they have two first-round picks. Joining me to discuss the NBA draft, the Nuggets, and maybe a little bit of David Roddy, too. I know all eyes are on the CSU star. Director of Scouting for 24/7 Sports, College Basketball Insider for CBS Sports HQ, Adam Finkelstein. Folks, I want to remind you, too, you can go to cbssports.com, the CBS Sports app, and 247sports.com for exhaustive NBA draft coverage, including mock drafts, player comparisons, and more. And, of course, Adam's going to give his pick-by-pick analysis on draft night on CBS Sports HQ. It's going to be awesome. I'm excited about it. Adam, my friend, thank you so much to get you on the for being on the program. I'm a big fan of yours, been following you, so love your stuff, love what you do.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, we're excited here, too. I mean, you know, normally with the Nuggets, the last few years or so, we haven't been too crazy when it comes to the draft because the Nuggets really haven't been in that spot for those big-name guys that we're going to talk about here in a moment. But, you know, you spread in some local talent, maybe you add another first-round pick to that. We're kind of painting the picture here in Colorado, Adam, as this is the most important Nuggets offseason perhaps ever. So, yeah, the draft is pretty important to Nuggets fans.
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning of the post-Tim Connelly era, I mean, he's had such a tremendous track record of picking and picking against the odds. I mean, the value that they've gotten over the years at places that doesn't traditionally yield great value has been so impressive. I mean, I don't really envy Calvin Booth. The bar is set so high that it's a tough act to follow, for sure.
No question. And you know, what's interesting with Conley, his drafts have been pretty good, even when at first it doesn't seem like they're going to be good. You just take, for example, Bones Highland last year. Because of the injuries with Jamal and MPJ, we got to see a lot of Bones Highland where we went, wow, Tim Connelly got another one right. Of course, took a chance on Michael Porter Jr. with the injury. When he can stay healthy, we'll be excited to see if that truly does work out overall. So you're right, Calvin Booth's got some interesting, obviously interesting shoes to fill all throughout what Connelly's done. But the draft, I think Connelly's been pretty good at.
Yeah, no, I think he's been really good, quite frankly. It's one of the things, you know, you alluded to it there, is that, like, you can't assess draft on the success of a draft on draft night. But that's kind of the way that the masses want to have it. You know, they want to react so quickly. And, you know, you don't know. I remember thinking Josh Jackson was going to be just as good as Jason Tatum. Like, everyone who saw him during grassroots basketball had that same impression. And obviously it has turned out to be anything but the case. So I do think there's a little bit of luck that's involved. But I also think it's about kind of understanding what the pick you have typically yields from a historic standpoint, and then making a calculated kind of risk-reward determination as to how you want to do it. And I think that's one of the things that Denver's been really good at. You mentioned Michael Porter. I thought, you know, when they took Bull late, I said, you know what, that's a really worthwhile risk. You know, if it hits, you're going to make it in a big way, and if it doesn't, it's not supposed to anyway. You know, so I think Denver's been really smart playing that risk-reward ratio over the years, and it's going to be interesting to see if that continues.
We're talking to Adam Finkelstein, Director of Scouting for 24/7 Sports, College Basketball Insider for CBS Sports HQ. And that's what's been nice with the Nuggets, though. They've gone into these drafts, for the most part, the last few years, with not a lot of pressure because of the grand slam that they hit with Nikola Jokic and, obviously,
sure,
Jamal Murray. When he's not hurt, I'd say he worked out pretty darn well, too. So the Nuggets have entered these drafts with not a lot of pressure. I feel kind of the same way about tomorrow night, but there's still pressure for the Nuggets in this offseason. So I'll be curious, Adam, to see if the Nuggets use both 21 and 30, or if they're setting some kind of package deal up more or less for another player or moving up in the draft.
Yeah, I think that's going to tell a lot about their spending habits as well. You know, I mean, there's obviously, since Tim left, there's been a lot of speculation about ownership and how much they're allowed to spend and stuff like that. The thing about where they pick at 21 and 30 is if you hit those picks, you can typically get a serviceable NBA rotation player at a fraction of the cost as someone who's not on a rookie contract. So I look at these two picks as an opportunity to fill out their rotation and really build the depth of their roster, but to do it in a cost-effective way. And there's enough veterans, multi-year college guys at the back who are projected to be at the back end of the first round that should allow them that opportunity. So it's going to be interesting to me which path they take. Do they look for those veterans who can step in, play right away in a cost-effective way, or do they look at a more high-risk, high-reward, long-term play like we've seen them do in the past, somebody like Marjon Beauchamp or Jaden Hardy, somebody like that is going to be really interesting.
What do you see, Adam, again, with two picks? This is kind of a loaded question, I suppose, but we've been talking about here, of course, the need for another wing-type player because, you know, Porter's fantastic when he's healthy and he can really get that shot going. But finding another guy, especially when you have Joker passing the ball around so much, it would just make sense. The more three-point shooters you have, the better you're going to feel about life.
Yeah, I think they've got quite a few of those, quite frankly, in this draft. I mean, I think at 21, you're probably going to see Agbaji already be off the board from Kansas, but he's certainly kind of the leader of that. One of his teammates, Christian Brown, I think fits in that. He could be around at 30. You know, if they take a swing at 21, I think you could see Brown be a factor there because he's got shot making, he's got toughness. Jalen Washington out of Santa Clara is a prospect that has really been rising up boards. Jalen Williams, I'm sorry, out of Santa Clara has really been rising up the boards because he's just had an ultra-efficient season at Santa Clara, same league as Chet Holmgren. A lot of people say, like, oh, Santa Clara, it's not a very high level. It's like, well, wait a minute. The guy who a lot of people, including myself, think is the best prospect in this draft played in that league, he's ultra-long and just has a ton of untapped upside. So he's another prospect in that range. I've got in my mock, and this would admittedly be a little bit of a slide for him, but I've got Malachi Branham falling back to 21. I think if that happens, that's a major win. But there's a number of guys who fit in that wing shooter category who should be in the mix between 21 and 30 who could provide some value there.
Is that what you see more or less, though, is the need for this team? Because, again, we're talking about depth, really, what they're going to ultimately do. Is that kind of where you're cooking for the most part at 21, is you really got to find that wing player, that guy that can shoot the ball?
Yeah, I think so. But I also think there's, like, if somebody like Dalen Terry's on the board, Dalen Terry to me is, like, he's not a shooter. But to me, if he's on the board at 21, you've got to take him because he's just really, really good, and he's got that perimeter size at 6'7", where he can play multiple positions, and he can really pass the ball at his size. And we know Jokic can pass it, so on the surface, it says, like, all right, we've already got somebody who can facilitate. But I'm of the belief that, you know, if you get multiple ball movers, you're building a really good foundation. I mean, you talk about the blueprint for Golden State. I mean, obviously, you start with the Splash Brothers. That's one thing. But if you look at the way Golden State built this, in the very beginning, they built it with guys who had high feel and who could really pass the ball, and they had enough belief in their player development program that they could teach shooting to a certain extent. So it's, and every team has their own internal philosophy about whether they draft for fit or whether they draft for the best player on the board within the confines of whatever variables they're working under. And obviously, by that, I mean, like, okay, how finances being the primary one and mandates from ownership relative to that. So it's going to be very interesting. There are going to be plenty. I will say this. If they need a wing who can make shots, I think they can still get value with that at the 30th pick. And at 21, assuming they don't move it, they can take a shot on a higher upside guy, even if he's not the quote-unquote best fit.
Maybe not the guy that could instantly make that impact, but as you said, down the road, Adam Finkelstein joining us, Director of Scouting for 24/7 Sports, College Basketball Insider for CBS Sports. What I think's interesting, too, when you look at the makeup of the roster, we've been seeing when Jamal's healthy, Jamal plays that point guard, and I honestly liked in college, you know, off and on seeing him really at that two. I thought that's where they were going to be back in the day when they had Emmanuel Mudiay at one, yeah. Murray at two. You say Dalen Terry, guys like that, I look at and say, or a Bones Highland even in that role next year. I kind of love the idea of a point guard guy and Bones starting, whatever. Maybe Monte's gone. Maybe you do take a point guard and you slide Jamal to two. What do you think about that?
No, I think there's a lot of validity to that concept. And you know, we talked about the wings, but there's also a decent amount of guards who are going to be available in that range, Dalen Terry being one. Ty Washington is another.
Yeah.
And these are kind of combos who can play on and off the ball, because if you've got somebody like Jamal Murray, whether you call him the one or the two, he's going to have the ball in his hands quite a bit. So ideally you want to pair him with somebody who can alleviate some of the playmaking responsibilities, but at the same time provide spot-up shooting, so you create the necessary floor spacing for someone like Murray to be at his best. And again, someone like Ty Washington would be ideal in that type of role. And I think, you know, given the spot where Denver picks at 21, he could be on the board there too. Dalen Terry, we talked about it, not a great shooter, but would provide another ball handler for Murray to slide off the ball at stretches. So I think that's another one that's going to be interesting. I think somebody like Kennedy Chandler, who's, you know, one of the better true point guards on the board, I don't know that that's a great fit, just because in theory, yeah, he moves Murray off the ball, but his lack of size, I just think is really concerning. And this is a guy who historically has not shot in the ball, actually had to totally remake his shot in his senior year in high school. So I'm not sure that he would be the guy in terms of adding a pure point guard.
Some of those guys that you mentioned, both at the guard position and ultimately what could look like, you know, the wing position could look like in this draft for the Nuggets, how many of those guys do you look at and say, I'd be comfortable with them getting meaningful minutes early? And again, Bones Highland, we mentioned him. I didn't expect him to get a lot of time. He ended up being a pretty significant piece. Are there names on that list where you look at 21, maybe even down 30, where you say, I could see those guys being a big piece to what they're doing, even as early as that first couple of months of the season?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, because I think in that, you know, kind of the 20s and the 30s, there's two groups of players. There's the high-risk, high-reward types, and I alluded to some of them, Marjon Beauchamp being one, Jaden Hardy being another. These are guys who are a year or two removed from high school and have significantly higher ceilings than maybe others, but aren't as ready to play right now. So they're high-risk, high-reward guys. And then you have the more college veterans who are more equipped to come in and play an immediate role, even if they don't have the star upside. We already talked about a number of them. Both of the Kansas kids have certainly fallen that category. Wendell Moore from Duke, another one, a guy who's really defensive-minded, super long, can make an open shot. He measured out extremely well as a vertical athlete at the combine, so he's somebody that falls into that category. Staying in the ACC, Jake LaRavia from Wake Forest, kind of your just ideal role player, because he's a, you know, spot-up shooter and ball mover who's not going to try and be the man, but is just going to create space for your best players to operate. So it's really a philosophical choice about, do you want to take a big swing, to use a baseball analogy, and try and, you know, swing for the fences on a high-risk, high-reward type guy, or do you want to just get guys who you know you can plug into your rotation and, again, get a very cost-effective role player to fill out the rest of your rotation?
We're talking to Adam Finkelstein of 24/7 Sports and College Basketball Insider for CBS Sports. Looking again at our local guy here, CSU, we've been talking a lot. We love working with Dave. We talk a lot of Colorado State on this show. David Roddy, I don't know, man. Nationally, where do you see him? I've seen some first round, late first round shots, maybe early second round, maybe mid second round. And then, of course, you get the real negative side of things where they wonder if Roddy's going to get drafted at all. When the Nuggets got that 30th pick, and then you see Roddy kind of floating around there on some boards, we did wonder, are we going to have a local guy stay local? From your perspective, in all of your studies, what's your makeup of CSU's David Roddy?
You know what? I think he's in the mix at 30. I don't think that's the reputation. You know, he doesn't have a ton of first-round buzz, but I remember when I was out at the Combine in Chicago, when you know, there's kind of two sources of intel. There's the stuff you read on the internet, and then there's the stuff that, you know, is kind of whispered behind the scenes. Mm. And what I would say is I think that Roddy has more fans among the NBA execs behind the scenes.
Interesting.
You know, I talked to at least one team out there that had a first-round grade on him. Had he played better, I'm of the belief that we put too much stock in the combine, And to his credit, he elected to play out there. I did not think he played as well as he could have. If he did, I think there would be a lot more first-round buzz. But again, I'm of the opinion, for someone who's that strong and moves as well as he does laterally, I was about 15 yards away from him when he was going through those agility drills, and I said, geez, this guy can move. and that just yields itself to being ultra-versatile on the defensive end of the floor, which is how you stick in the modern-day NBA, if you can, you know, make an open shot. And obviously that, you know, his offensive role is going to evolve from what we saw at Colorado State, but I'm a believer in his physical tools. I'm a believer in his mentality. His energy level really was obvious in that setting. His competitiveness was obvious in that setting. So I think there's a shot that he could surprise some people and be in the mix around 30. But I also think, more importantly, he's a guy that if he goes in the second round, could stick, you know, whether he gets a two-way contract or whatever, he could stick in the NBA for a long time.
Well, and I know Rams fans are just raising their fists in the air, loving that, man. But I got
to
ask you,
I got to play to my audience. You know?
Hey, it's what I do every single day, man.
Yeah.
But you look at David again, and everything you just said, that's what we've been seeing over these years and loving about the guy. What is that knock on David, though, that, you know, where some fans, like the really, you know, hey, they're all in, David's going first round, no doubt about it, they cringe when any kind of negative is brought up. What is that negative or two that you think's keeping David from more of an obvious, even obvious late first round kind of guy, as opposed to just being floating around late first round, early second round?
Well, it's, you know, a couple things. I think there's the pedigree, first of all, of saying, like, okay, who's the level of competition? Because even before Colorado State, like, most people don't know, Northwestern was dying to have him. This is a guy who ended up at Colorado State, not because he didn't have high major recruitment, but just because he chose to go to Colorado State. Northwestern literally dying to have him, and could have played in the Big Ten. But there is that, because going back to his high school days, he was on a Howard Pulley team that wasn't very good in the EYBL, at least his last year. Just kind of under the radar then, goes out to Colorado State, and I think the body type, people are like, ah, what position does he play? Oh, how well does he shoot it now? He shot almost 44% from the three-point line this year, made a 3.5 a game, but if you look at previous years, you're asking yourself, okay, is this an outlier? Is this because he had so much volume? Because that, there is a, you know, historically speaking, that can happen. Someone who has total freedom shoots a higher percentage than normal, and all of a sudden when they go to the NBA and they're just a spot-up shooter and their confidence isn't flowing as much as when they were allowed to take any shot they wanted, all of a sudden they regress and they shoot 30% from the three-point line. So I think those are the areas that, you know, the body type on the surface is a concern. I actually think it's an asset long-term because of how strong and the fact that it doesn't limit his quickness, but I just think superficially it gives some people some pause. And then I think just the productivity against the highest level competition is what people are going to fall back on, although, admittedly, I think that's a little bit of a lazy eval.
And we're talking to Adam Finkelstein of 24/7 Sports, college basketball insider for CBS Sports. Overall, just looking at this draft, obviously led by Chet Holmgren, we'll see where what's going to ultimately end up with this top five picks. I'm excited to see where we're going to go there. What's your makeup of this class going into it? You've studied all of these players so extensively. Do you have any kind of rating of those, like, top five prospects when you look at this and how they're leading leading into the draft tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think Chet is the number one prospect on my board. I don't expect him to go number one, but I, you know, to be honest with you, I think that's an area that people may be overanalyzing. I know he's skinny, but if he were 20 pounds heavier, would we be having this conversation? Mm. And, you know, what are the chances he's not 20 pounds heavier a year from now? So that's kind of where I go to with that. That's admittedly a bit of an oversimplification, but when you've got a 7-footer who can protect the rim as well as he does, who's as skilled as he is, being able to shoot the three with just a super naturally soft touch. And then the thing that impressed me most about his year at Gonzaga was how efficient he was as a finisher. Like, for someone who still has to build up his body, he's so quick off his feet. He was, I think, by the metrics, the most efficient finisher in college basketball. So the knock on him is that he's skinny, and he's not necessarily like a go-to player offensively. He doesn't create his own shot. But even if he doesn't, like, you know, you have to ask yourself who else is in the mix. So Orlando's likely to take Jabari Smith, from what everybody's saying. Jabari Smith is a guy who's ultra-talented, can really shoot the ball. He's versatile defensively, so he fits the modern-day NBA. But what concerns me about him is how little of his offense comes in the paint for a guy who's 6'10". Chet and Paolo got about 40% of their point production inside the paint. Jabari was at 19%. He does not go inside the paint. He settles for a bunch of tough shots. And I just think if you're the first pick in the draft, you've got to have some star potential. And if Jabari Smith doesn't learn how to get more easy points at the rim, it just gives me a lot of pause about his star potential as an offensive alpha.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all breaks down. Now, every year when you're studying the draft, my favorite thing about the drafts, any kind of sport, is you kind of see the theme, what teams are really looking for, where players are changing their game. Do you catch any kind of that when you look at the top five, top 10 guys, and you look at, okay, this is kind of the theme for this year's draft?
Yeah, this is the draft of the foreman. I mean, and it's somewhat funny because the power forward position is a little bit outdated, but you've got potentially if someone wants to call Chet Holmgren a four, right, which he's more of a five in my mind, but if you want to call him a four, you can make the argument that the first four picks in this draft are all going to be foremen because Jabari, Chet, Paolo, and then Keegan Murray, who is now currently four on my mock because I don't think Sacramento is going to take Jaden Ivey, who I think they should take, but I don't think they're going to. So the first four players in this draft are all potentially four men. So I think it's somewhat counterintuitive because that power forward position is becoming somewhat extinct. But with guys like Jabari and also Keegan Murray, there's hope that they can evolve into those versatile big wings that are, what the modern-day NBA is really prioritizing right now.
That's fascinating, too, to see how the game evolves. You talk about the four-man, several years ago, we'd be talking about just getting a real tough guy that can play down in the paint and just, basically be almost a four-and-a-half. But now, like you said, you need guys that can shoot. That's where we're seeing the transition, whether it's one through five. I mean, that's the big thing that we're watching. And again, seeing it kind of focused in on the four side of things will be for sure interesting to see how it breaks down tomorrow night. Adam, my man, appreciate you. Love what you do. I know you are busy. This is you're having a field day. This is great. And all your study, all your work on these players. It's a lot of fun to follow along, my friend.
I appreciate you. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, man. Let's do it again sometime.
No doubt.
All right. Adam Finkelstein, Director of Scouting for 24/7 Sports. We'll take a break. I want to come back. Some thoughts on what he had to say about what the Nuggets might do with 21. He's kind of more on the fact that they will stay there, stay with those picks, and take somebody 21 that might be a meaningful minutes type guy. And then at 30, they can take a flyer. Now, I don't think David Roddy's a flyer. I mean, you just get him saying Finkelstein, he's a national guy. He's saying Roddy's a consistent player. Like, that guy's going to be getting meaningful minutes sooner rather than later. So at 30, if you're the Nuggets, do you take a guy like Roddy, who you know exactly what you're getting, or do you take a wild card, kind of like Bones Highland was last year? That's what's going to be interesting about tomorrow night. A lot of Avs, Lightning talk to go. Go vote at theholeshow.com. Who you got in game four? The Method Flow Products poll question of the day. The Lightning were smoking this poll earlier, and now it's the Avalanche on this side of things. So go vote at theholeshow.com. 12:40 the time. I got Stampede tickets to give away, courtesy of Buildings by Design, Extreme Bull Riding, all that and more coming up, so you're not going to want to miss your opportunities to win. Jades, we're way overdue here. Let's jump out and get the latest on the local sports flash.